Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings, Text 52. Nishekadi smashanantai Samskarai samskrito dvija. Indriyeshu kriya yagnan jnana dipeshu jivati. Nisheka adi, the beginning of life, the purificatory process of garbhadana, performed with when the father begets a child by discharging semen into the womb of the mother.
The beginning of the process of garbhadana, performed when the father begets a child by discharging semen into the womb of the mother.
Smashana antai. And at death, when the body is put into a crematorium and burned to ashes. Samskarai, by such purificatory processes. Samskrita, purified. Dvija, a twice born Brahmana. Indriyeshu, into the senses. Kriya yagnan, activities and sacrifices, which elevate one to a higher planetary system. Jnana dipeshu, by enlightenment in real knowledge. Juvati, offers. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A twice-born Brahmana, Dvija, gains his life by the grace of his parents, through the process of purification known as garbhadana. There are also other processes of purification until the end of life, when the funeral ceremony, Antyeshti Kriya, is performed. Thus, in due course, of a qualified brahmana becomes uninterested in materialistic activities and sacrifices, but he offers essential activities and full knowledge into the working senses, which are illuminated by the fire of knowledge. Report. Those interested in materialistic activities remain in the cycle of birth and death. Praviti marga, or the inclination to stay in the material world to enjoy varieties of sense gratification, has been explained in the previous verse. Now in this verse, it is explained that one who has perfect brahminical knowledge rejects the process of elevation to higher planets and accepts nivritti marga. In other words, he prepares himself to go back home, back to Godhead. Those who are not brahmanas, but atheists, do not know what is pravritti marg or nivritti marg. They simply want to obtain pleasure at any cost. Our Krishna consciousness movement is therefore training devotees to give up the pravritti marg and accept the nivritti marg, in order to return home back to Godhead. This is a little difficult to understand, but it is very easy. One takes the Krishna consciousness seriously and tries to understand Krishna. A Krishna conscious person can understand that performing yajna, according to the karmakanda system, is a useless waste of time, and that merely giving up the karmakanda and accepting the process of speculation is also unfruitful. Therefore, Narottam Das Thakur is sung in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika, Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Kevala Vishera Banda, Amrita Baliya Yeva Kaya, Nana Yoni Sara Pure, Kadarya Bhakshane Kare, Tara Janma Antak Pati Yaya. The life of Karma Kanda or Jnana Kanda is like a poison pot, and one who takes such a life is doomed. In the karmakanda system, one is destined to accept birth and death again and again. Similarly with Gyanakanda, one falls down again into to this material world. Only worship of the Supreme Person offers one the safety of going back home, back to Godhead. Nishe kadi shama nantai samskarai samskrito dvija indriyeshu kriya yagnan yanadipeshu juvati. Twice born brahmana dvija gains his life by the grace of his parents through the process of purification known as garbhadana. There are also other processes of purification until the end of life when the funeral ceremony antyeshti kriya is performed. Thus, in due course, a qualified brahmana becomes uninterested in materialistic activities and sacrifices, but he offers essential sacrifices in full knowledge unto the working senses, which are illuminated by the fire of knowledge. Mam Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatundeve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatyate Satarane. The processes of Karmakanda and Gyanakanda are actually quite prevalent, even in those who are aspiring to become devotees. These are two types of consciousness which are inherent in the conditioned soul. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Chatur vidha vajante mam jnana sukritina arjuna arta jignasya artarati jnani cha bharatar shiva. That four kinds of pious people, they approach Krishna. One of them is arta. Arta means one who's suffering. This is the first qualification to approach Krishna. Unless one is thinking that one is suffering, why would one approach Krishna? If one is thinking, I'm happy, I'm enjoying, then all one will think is that if I approach Krishna, Krishna will take my happiness away from me. And then I'll suffer, but right now I'm enjoying. Yasya nugranami karishe taddanai shanai. That generally speaking, when one first approaches Krishna, Krishna takes, quote, everything away. What is that everything away? It means that Krishna takes away the sources of suffering. Why are people suffering? Krishna says, kama esha, krodha esha, rajaguna samudbhava, mahashino mahapatma vidinam iha varina. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material modes of passion and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. So the desire to enjoy the material nature and to control it are the sources of suffering. And how do they manifest? The more one wants to enjoy the material nature, generally speaking, the more one is engaged in killing animals for eating or for other purposes, because animal killing is a major foundation for the economic gain in modern society. Not only do they eat the animal, they take the skin and make leather from it, from the cow, for instance, or from other. When I was shooting books to the airport, one of our major in America, one of our major customers were cowboys. And when they were coming through the airport, we just go, wow, look at that. We just point to their shoes, their boots, actually. They're very proud of their boots, the cowboys in America. And they're made of all different kinds of animals. And obviously when people dress a certain way, they want people to recognize them. And most people don't recognize them. And you go, and you learn the animal skins after some time. You go, wow, alligator, right? And they go, yeah, how did you know? Shake his hand, yeah, wow, good to meet you. I think, wow, this is my soulmate or something. He knows a good crocodile when he sees it. And inevitably they buy the book, simply because you recognize what kind of shoe, crocodile, alligator, Snake, yeah, especially snake is popular. Moccasin snake, and they have bear skin, whatever, everything. The only thing they don't have is ants. Ant skin. Wow, you got an ant skin boot. Wow. Those are really cool. So people are absorbed in making profit out of killing animals. What to speak of nowadays, they kill their own children and they take parts of the aborted child and they use it for economic gain. And illicit sex, of course everyone knows about illicit sex. It's not, used to be people were embarrassed. But nowadays, it's right out in the open. It's like, you know, literally it's right in your face. And intoxication, parts of America, I was distributing Bhakti Godheads in the street. This is like 30 years ago. We were doing the cars at stop signs, just like we have stop signs here. So when people stop, you go up and hand them a Bhakti Godhead really quick and ask for a donation. And some of the stop signs were like for a minute and a half. So you could do 500, 700 Bhakti Godheads a day doing like that. But in certain states in America, every single person practically who's in the car, you'd see between their legs is a bottle of alcohol. They probably couldn't drive unless you were drunk. So intoxication is more or less considered not only normal, it's expected. If you don't drink, you're considered to be a social outcast. People will be reluctant to associate with you. And of course, mental speculation, gambling, as we know, there's places in America, a lot of places, which are famous for their gambling. My mother and father used to live in Las Vegas, and when I arrived there one time taking the bus, the driver said, "Welcome to Sin City, or Lost Wages." And they have hotels there, you know, 10,000 people for 10, and not only one, but hundred, at least a couple of hundred hotels, 10,000 people. People used to flock there because they didn't know what to do with their money. They go there and spend it. They'd not spend it. They'd throw it away. And of course, the hotel would provide free drinks. Because the more intoxicated people were, the more they'd spend. And if you lost $100,000 and they give you a free teddy bear or something, you can cry in the teddy bear. So, modern civilization is absorbed in all these four root pillars of sinful activity, which means that everyone is suffering. Where people may think it's their enjoyment, but their enjoyment is when they're gratifying their senses temporarily, when they're throwing the dice, hoping it's going to turn out to be seven, and it's, the dice are loaded, so it's always five or seven or three or something. So for that one moment they allow them to win, they've just lost $100,000, they roll the dice, and it's all been controlled, and they win finally. Wow, I'm going to roll, I'm going to streak. I won $1,000. I just lost $100,000. But I just won $1,000. I'm in a streak. They roll it again and they lose another $100,000. But that one time they win, they think, wow, I was so happy when I won that $1,000. So that temporary relief from the anxiety of wanting to gratify the senses, when it says gratified temporarily for a few moments, and one thinks he's in bliss and wants to recapture that bliss, even at the cost of suffering. So, the absence of that suffering, that's called happiness in the material world. So when one is realized, one day he wakes up and realizes that I'm suffering, why am I suffering? Then he might make some progress. And he thinks, I know why I'm suffering, because I'm not gratifying my senses. I only had one Big Mac at the hamburger store. I should have gotten two, then I would have been happy. As a matter of fact, the more you eat, the more they have chemicals in food, like in popcorn at the restaurants. They put a certain chemical into the popcorn. So the more you eat the popcorn, the hungrier you get. As a matter of fact, they put extra salt in the popcorn, so you become thirsty. So by the time you're done with your third or fourth order of popcorn and fifth drink, they made more money from you from the popcorn and the drinks than they did from the entrance into the movie theater. Matter of fact, they hardly had time to see the movie because you were too busy waiting for the online with all the other customers waiting for the popcorn and the drinks. So, when one realizes that actually the reason why I'm suffering is not because I haven't gratified my senses, is because my senses are demanding that I gratify them. And they're never satisfied, as Krishna said, and they burn like fire. And even when I gratify my senses, because they're never satisfied, it's like pouring water on the fire, pouring gasoline on the fire, temporarily may go out, but then afterwards it just blazes into a bigger fire. Therefore, one who controls his senses and fixes his mind upon me, Krishna says, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Otherwise, if we don't control our senses and we don't fix our mind upon Krishna, our intelligence just will be carried away. Indriyani hi charitam yan mano nu vidyate tadasya harati pragya vayor navami vambasi. Just like a boat on the water gets swept away by a strong wind, so even one of the roaming senses in which the mind becomes fixed can carry away a man's intelligence. So the body is compared to the boat, and the sails, just like a boat on the water, is swept away by a strong wind. So even one of the roaming senses in which the mind becomes fixed can carry away a man's intelligence. So the roaming senses are compared to the wind, which takes the sails and carries away the boat along with the intelligence. So this is all in the realm of karmakanda. People are karmakanda, jnanakanda, vishaya-bandha. That within the realm of karmakanda, because people don't want to control their senses, they're given a little bit of incentive to control their senses by promise that if you perform this sacrifice, just give some energy towards the sacrifice, then you'll get bigger enjoyment in the future. Like a child. The child will not take the medicine. But if you say, my dear child, if you take the medicine, then we'll give you a candy. Sometimes children even go to the dentist. Not because they have a toothache. But they, oh, mom, my teeth are hurting me. Please, let's go. Because the dentist gives a lollipop. The dentist is very happy here that this child is here back again. You know, let me see, you know, a little bit of spot there, maybe it's a cavity. Maybe it's he didn't brush his teeth before he came, but who cares? He's your lollipop. There's two lollipops, maybe we'll get twice as many cavities. So there's a promise that if you sacrifice some energy, then you'll get something better in return. That's called karmakanda. More gratification of the senses. And then after gratifying the senses in the realm of the Shudra or the Vaishya, Shudra is crying because he doesn't have enough sense gratification. And the Vaishya, he wants more, better quality of sense gratification. He wants better food, better relationships, better air, better water, better everything. He's an ecologist, a real ecologist. And the Karmakanda defines, you know, how to get good water, how to get good food, how to protect the cows, how to get good milk. It's all there in the Karmakanda section. But when one is realizing that I have everything, I have a nice family, my food is fantastic, the weather is great, I'm in the right place, I have economically, I'm secure, my whole life is materially perfect, but I'm still not happy. So then one inquires, maybe there's something more. The Vedas have given me information of how to be happy by Karmakanda. So maybe there's some higher realm of happiness. And because generally in the Vedic civilization, there are many preachers, many brahmanas who explain about the higher planets, about the higher states of life, Gyanakanda, how if you perform another type of sacrifice, you control your senses even more, then you become eligible to go to the heavenly planets. You become eligible to perform, become more and more powerful, more and more influential, more and more learned, etc., etc. And then people who are more elevated, more experienced, they want to perform the activities of Gyanakanda. So for thus, it means Jignasu. Jignasu means inquisitive. When people are inquisitive, they approach people who have more knowledge than they do. Just like everyone is civilized, people are generally inquisitive. People are not so civilized, like they don't, you know, a book. What's a book? It was Manidharpa who was saying when he was distributing books in a certain country in Europe, people look at the book. They weren't interested in reading it. They were just wondering what flavor it was. Brown on the cover that reminded them of chocolate, so they became attached to it. But reading a book, that they did, you know, so many decades ago. They read something, maybe the title of the book or something. So such people are just interested in eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Whatever it is that's available for eating, whatever is available for sleeping, mating, defending, they couldn't care less as long as their senses are temporarily gratified. Those who are a little bit more intelligent, they become inquisitive, is there a higher state of existence? And they find out from people who have more knowledge than they do. Anyone who they consider have more knowledge, we could say they're in the Brahmin class, although such persons may be atheistic and just materialistic. But because they have more knowledge, what they inquire from them, even the birds, they inquire, beep, beep, where's the worm? So what to speak of a human being, they're also inquiring, beep, beep, where's the money? Because with money, we can gratify our senses. So the Kshatriyas in the Vedic culture, they were inquisitive. They were very powerful, but they also learned, just like Ramachandra and Lakshman. They were taken by Vishwamitra Muni to kill one demon, Sobari, woman demon. But on the way, then Vishwamitra taught Lord Ramachandra and Lord Lakshman how to chant mantras that turn into weapons, Bala and Abala. So it's not you read the mantra and then you suddenly go out and you just throw your mantra, you know, knock down a mountain. No, you have to hear it from the right source, from the guru who knows how to chant the mantra. You have to duplicate the same vibration that the guru is vibrating, and then it becomes effective. Otherwise, for instance, in the Vedic culture, if you want to chant, you go to Gurukul, you can spend 6 months learning one vowel, ah. I don't know if that's exactly the vowel, but anyhow, something like ah. You may learn six months living in the shelter of the guru's ashram, performing austerity, learning no distractions, no internet, no football, simply learning these mantras and going out and collecting firewood like Krishna and Balaram to bring to the guru, or going and collecting little rice. And that's it. You just learn the mantras, and after 6 months you learn how to chant ah and o and e and ah, e, etc. O. And then when you actually chant the mantras, it has effect. More than effect than just stirring up our digestive juices. It actually has a physical effect in the world. So much so that when the Brahmins chanted the mantras and King Prithu's fire sacrifice for his Ashwamedha Yagya, that when Indra tried to interfere with the sacrifice, Prithu Maharaj asked the priest to chant the mantra so that Indra would fall into the fire and become part of the sacrifice. And Indra was falling into the fire by the potency of the Vedic priests chanting their mantras. Now, if we chant mantras, a fly won't even fall into the fire, but to speak of Indra. So that's the difference between one who's trained in the Vedic culture and one who's simply imitating or following the Vedic culture to the best of their ability. The chanting of the Vedic mantras specifically. So the Kshatriyas would receive knowledge at least how to govern, how to control the material universe to that extent, and how to fight. And the Brahmins, they already enter into the Vedic knowledge, and they realize that they're not their body. And they try to become eligible for liberation, just like when Vishvamrita came to see Dasarath to take Lord Ramachandra and Lakshman to protect the sages from this Subari. Then immediately Dasarath asked Lord Vishvamrita Muni, he said, how is your attempt to conquer over birth and death going? So that's the job of the Brahmins, to conquer birth and death. And help others conquer birth and death too. So that's all part of Gyanakanda. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Gyane priyasa murupastana manta eva. Set aside this attempt for speculative knowledge, to try to get out of material existence, or try to enjoy material energy. Both are speculations. One is, I like this material world, let me see how to control it and enjoy it. The other is, I've tried so hard to control and enjoy the material world, and it was just a waste of time, how to get out of it. So this is all speculation. Priyasam udapasta, this endeavor, Jnane priya udapasta, set it aside, jivanti samukharitam bhavadiya vartam, and just hear from the devotees about how to worship Krishna. Stane sita shuti tam dhanuvangmanopir. There's no need to change one's position, because after all, the soul is not going to change his position, and Krishna consciousness is interested in the soul waking up. Anyone can hear. Prabhupada said even a dog can hear the Hare Krishna mantra. And apparently sometimes it appeared that the dogs were dancing too, or at least they were reciprocating. They were barking in terms of trying to chant the holy name. So even a dog, Prabhupada said in that happening album, even a dog can take part. So anyone can take part in any situation, in any position. So there's no need to change one's position, but Shuti Gitam Dhanavangmanobir, one should try to hear submissively from the Vedas and then try to figure out how to put it into practice in one's personal life. And then the result will be Ye Priyasa Jita Jitok Taistri Lokyam. Then Krishna will reciprocate and reveal himself, and then one's life will become perfect. So we accept that the purpose of life is to become Krishna conscious, then there's a process of doing it in any circumstance. And if we don't accept that there's a process to become Krishna conscious, or if we're not interested in any process to becoming Krishna conscious, then at best, at least if we can take part in the karmakanda and jnanakanda activities, even if we're attached to enjoying the material world or getting out of it, getting out of our suffering, still, if we try to practice Krishna consciousness in the midst of those attempts to enjoy or become detached from material energy, still we can gradually make some progress and become purified by the power of the holy name, if we chant it sincerely. Therefore, akama savakama va moksha kama udaradi tirvena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha para. That whether one is full of desires or has no desire, that is the devotee, or desires liberation, still, if one performs devotional service with seriousness, tivrena, intensity, then Krishna will give one all facilities to not only satisfy the senses according to what's possible, what's would be auspicious for the person, favorable, but at the same time, Krishna will give one opportunities to make progress in devotional service too. Like we have that in examples of the four. Gajendra was suffering, but he became liberated by calling out to Krishna, and Vishnu coming and killing the crocodile and liberating both the crocodile and Gajendra, the elephant. Dhruva Maharaj, who had great desires for material gain, but Krishna came and revealed himself after his sincere austerities, following his gurus, Narada Muni's directions. Sages of Namisharanya wanted liberation, or at least knowledge of how to make the material world auspicious. And they got, by hearing from Suta Goswami, they also became enlightened. And the four Kumaras, wanting liberation, went to Vaikuntha, met Narayan, and became pure devotees. So, this is possible for anyone in any position, if they somehow or another take shelter of Vishnu, and then Krishna will help them not only get their results of what they desire, but also make progress in pure devotional service. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
You were describing how a person gradually develops their understanding and their endeavors. So my question is, how come in present society we are all just at the preliminary stages? There are no people who are like, we are here in this world for so long, all the jivas, and there are no section of persons who are already like at the end of it that would lead us.
Well, we're in Kali Yuga for one thing. The other thing is that everyone who is so qualified already went back to Godhead. By the time Dwarpa Yuga is over, everyone realizes Kali Yuga is coming, we've got to get out of here quick. So they already went back to Godhead, leaving us behind, because we weren't so anxious to go back to Godhead. But those who actually become eligible, just like when you go to a prison house, it's pretty rare to find saintly people there, because everyone claims that they got there by accident or unfairly. Most of the people got there because they did something wrong, at least we could say. So to come to the material world and expect to find in the earth planet in Kali Yuga a section of saintly persons, that was there in the other yugas, but not in Kali Yuga. Except when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement becomes prominent, then you may find such a section again for at least 10,000 years, till the other 417,000 years go by, where again you'll find it's pretty rare to find a liberated soul.
So those who come, they are like on some kind of a rescue mission for all of us others who are here.
Yes, like Prabhupada, for instance. Otherwise, where would we be? Who would we take shelter of? I don't think the Beatles would have taken us back to Godhead. Yes. What happened to Abhidhuta Roy? Is he here? He didn't ask a question? Oh, okay, go ahead.
Now for a few lectures we are speaking about pravritti and nivritti mark. Krishna is using those terms in 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, though there nivritti has kind of opposed meaning, this pravritti cha nivritti, if you can explain, because he's using...
I don't know, what are you referring to?
Nivritti, that means things not to be done, and here pravritti means things to be done, but nivritti means things which even more should be done. So,
no, no, vritti
in
means,
sense,
vritti means that nivritti means we shouldn't do things.
Yeah, but in 18th chapter, Krishna says pravritti cha nivritti.
Janana vidara asra. They don't know what's to be done and what's not to be done.
No, in 18th chapter.
That's the 18th. Oh, that's 16th.
Yeah.
Pravritti cha nivritti cha.
Yes.
It says. Adharmam iti dharmam cha, mandite dhamma sabrita, sarvata viparitam cha, buddhisaparta, tamasi. And yaya dharmam adharmam cha, karya karya cha, eva cha.
This
none of those verses have anything about pravritti. Pravittim chan vritim cha karya karya bhayabhaye bandha moksha shiyavedi buddhi suparta sattviki. So pravitti is doing what you should do, and nivritti, what you're not supposed to do. Yeah, so that's the same thing.
But here nivritti means the path of liberation, even more auspicious than...
No, it means also, it means getting out of the material world, what you're not supposed to be doing. Which implies what you're supposed to be doing. It implies. In other words, pravritti, which is what you're doing, implies, you know, working in the material world. But it implies that you're not supposed to be working in the material world, because we're not part of the material energy. And vritti, you're not supposed to be working in the material world, negative, but you're supposed to be working in the spiritual world. That's implied. So it's being presented from the point of view of liberation.
Yes.
From the material point of view, pravritti is auspicious because at least you'll get elevated. And nivritti is inauspicious because it's doing things, it's working in the material world in a way you're not supposed to be. But from the liberated platform, pravritti is inauspicious because whatever you do in the material world is going to have a reaction, you're going to have to take another body. And nivritti means to stop doing everything in the material world and to do something in the spiritual world. So it depends which point of view you're looking at. Anything else?
There's from Avadhuta Rai Prabhu, and it's not actually a question, but it's just a note. I just read yesterday that if the amsha of the devata, e.g. Brahma, for using Brahmastra, is not in the person who gets a mantra from using Divya Astra, the Astra will not be effective.
Okay, good. Don't get a mantra from someone who doesn't know what they're doing. Thank you very much. Grandarashima Bhagavatam Kidai.